Hare Krishna. So nice to see you all here tonight. For anyone who has been listening very carefully to this pastime, there may come up so many questions. I would encourage you to ask them, because by doing that, you go more deeply into the understanding of what is happening here. Of course, we can't understand, but we have a deeper experience if we ask questions. And also, the further that you go into the pastime, the more bewildered you'll become. So one question, a question that I was asked, was how is it that the mothers loved their sons more because they were Krishna? How did that work? They saw them as their children, so how did they love Krishna when they saw their sons? So this is it's very impossible to, practically impossible to explain, but we can say that they were attracted to their children, to the boys, in the same way that they loved Krishna. So then the question may come up then, so did they love their sons and Krishna equally now? And the answer is no. Their love for Krishna in his undisguised form increased even more rapidly than their love for their own sons. So in both cases, their sons and Krishna, it was Krishna who had become the object of their love. In our last reading, we heard how Balaram was very gently released from the covering of Yogamaya. Just at the very, very end of the pastime, Krishna, he knew that Balaram was going to be angry at Brahma for stealing the boys and the calves. And also he knew that he would miss them so much when he realized they were not present. So, and the other reason was that he wanted Balaram to know was that he wanted him to also experience the incredible wonderment of this situation. So Baladev, as the Yogamaya gently released, he is all-knowing and beyond Maya, and first he noticed how the ladies were so absorbed in their sons. It was not expected because the gopis were not under the influence of the Maya that increases family attachment. They're free from bodily illusion, and yet here they're experiencing increasing love for their own children. He also noticed that his love for their children was also different. But not only that, he saw that the ladies loved each other's children exactly as if their children was their own. And not only that, they had increasing affection for Krishna in his undisguised form. He noticed that slowly, day by day, everyone's love had increased for the children in such an extraordinary way that nobody noticed. It was 5 or 6 days earlier that Baladev understood this situation. He had recognized the presence of Krishna's mystic energy that was covering all the residents of Brudj. He spoke to his younger brother to confirm his understanding, but Krishna did not want anyone else, only Balaram, to know what had occurred. Meanwhile, Lord Brahma decided to return to Vrindavan to see what was happening. He knew he had safely kept the boys and the calves in a mystic sleep, and yet he was a little fearful that perhaps he may have done something incorrect. Although we are about to witness the extreme mortification or humiliation of the controller of universal affairs, we should not think that only this was because Brahma was at fault. Krishna also wanted this pastime to occur. He wanted to personally taste the incredible love of all Braj and how they feel towards him. So let us now go and see what is happening. It was only a moment of Brahma's calculation, or enough time that it would take to push a needle through a petal. And Brahma came back quickly. He wanted to see what had occurred as a result of his stealing. He was also afraid that he was playing with fire. Krishna was his master, and for fun, he had stolen away the calves and boys. He was well aware that he might have made a mistake, so he came back. When he returned, to his astonishment, he saw that the boys and the calves were all there as they were before, playing with Krishna in exactly the same way that they were before, without any change. He was astonished, and he thought, "What is this? As far as I know, I kept these boys and calves sleeping under my mystic powers. They have not arisen. So who are these? Maybe somehow Krishna has removed them from the cave and brought them here." But he looked and he saw that the calves and boys were exactly the same as he had left them. "Then who are these? Where did they come from? Is there another set of boys? Are these the same ones?" Brahma was confused, and he thought about this subject with his four heads in various ways. He thought, "As far as I can see, the boys are sleeping as they were before. But here, I see them playing. I go to the cave and the boys are there. But then, does Krishna, as soon as I turn my back, does he take them away and put them here so that when I come here I see them, and then when I go back there I see them as well? Or does Krishna take them from here and put them there and return them to there and then bring them back? This was most confusing, incredibly confusing. Are there two sets? They look identical. How could there be two sets at the same time? How could there be two identical sets at the same time? Have the boys there or here been created by Krishna? Did Krishna keep the ones there that are asleep? Or are they both creations of Krishna? Thinking and thinking, he could not understand what was happening. Who is now keeping company with Krishna, exactly as before? Brahma could not comprehend that now there could be two sets of cows and calves, calves and boys, exactly identical. Exactly identical, one playing here and one sleeping there. Although he is the most intelligent person, the creator of the whole universe, born from the navel of Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma became completely bewildered by his own endeavor to bewilder, to display his powers of bewilderment. You see, Brahma wanted to mystify he who can never be mystified, who, on the contrary, mystifies the whole universe and is the source of Lord Brahma's powers. His attempt was actually ludicrous. As a firefly, a small shining insect, tries to compete with the light of the sun. One who wants to display their power to defeat the all-powerful is simply a great fool. And thus it was said, O resident of Satyaloka, O Aja, unborn Brahma, it is true that you are Aja, or a goat. By your intelligence, you created this universe. But now you want to bewilder us with your Maya? You don't know who we are, but we will show you. Look, although we are calves grazing on Vrindavan's grass and cowherd boys herding those calves, our real form is only one. Then, as Brahma looked on, all those millions and trillions of calves and boys transformed before his very eyes. Having bluish complexions, wearing glowing yellow garments, all these personalities had four arms holding a conch, disc, mace, and lotus flower in their hands. And they wore golden bejeweled helmets and sparkling earrings. And on their chests was the emblem of Lakshmi and the Kustaba gem, as well as golden necklaces, armbands, bracelets, anklets. They wore garlands of fresh forest flowers, and tulsi manjaris were scattered all over their bodies. What is this? An unlimited array of Vishnu expansions within my gaze. Brahma was amazed beyond any comprehension. Watching this unbelievable display, he lost control of his senses. They didn't work anymore. They stopped functioning. As he looked, stunned beyond comprehension, he saw himself and all moving and non-moving beings, from the greatest himself to the lowest, most insignificant, like an ant or a blade of grass. He saw them all dancing and worshipping these Vishnu Murtis. The splendor of what Lord Brahma was witnessing then increased. With even greater astonishment, he saw that each of these unlimited Vishnu forms was surrounded by all the material ingredients personified. Each one was surrounded unlimitedly. They were surrounded. He saw that they were surrounded by time, the six seasons, the 10 directions, the 8 senses, the 5 elements, the 9 planets, and all other aspects of material creation. The subtle elements, assuming personality and form, were all worshipping the Lord with great opulence. He saw that the whole of creation, everything, had become subjugated by the power of the Lord. Now, those who worshipped these Vishnu Murtis, whose transcendental bodies shone with extraordinary beauty and opulence, they were blessing him with their compassionate, sidelong glances. Lord Brahma was completely mystified. This was too much. What is this? Stunned by transcendental bliss, he was silent. He could not comprehend the magnitude of what he was seeing. understanding Brahma's difficulty. Krishna at once restored the curtain of his yoga maya. And what did Brahma see when his external consciousness was revived? He stood up like a dead man coming back to life and opening his eyes with great difficulty. He saw the universe and himself looking in all directions. Brahma immediately understood now where he was. Seeing Vrindavan before him, full of trees, which are pleasing in all seasons and the source of life for everyone, he also saw Krishna, unlimited and all-powerful, yet standing before him, alone, all alone, as he was before. A small gopa boy with a handful of uneaten rice moistening his left palm. His eyes were moving here and there in anxious searching for his calves and his boyfriends. Brahma saw the absolute truth, the one without a second, who possesses unlimited knowledge, who is unlimited, assuming the role of a child in the family of a village cowherd man, standing quietly before him. And what did he do next? Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan aeroplane and he touched the ground. He fell hastily before Krishna like a golden rod. He who has a false understanding of his own importance, whose body is composed 90% of intelligence and is the husband of the goddess of learning, who thought himself the wisest person in the whole universe with these extraordinary qualifications, his pride now was subdued. He understood that he was merely a devata, an important figure, yes, but no doubt that he was still simply a devata. Again and again he chastened himself, he chastised himself for attempting to show his insignificant powers before the unlimited potency of Krishna. This offensive act, it filled him with such remorse. He would rise and fall to the ground, crying, rolling on the ground, crying, tears of joy and astonishment, tears of shame. He tried in his confusion to place each one of his four heads, which are facing in four different directions, in the dust before Krishna's feet. And and the effulgence of the jewels on his four glittering crowns was neutralized by the radiance of Krishna's toenails. Again and again, he rose and he fell. He rose and he fell. Thinking of his offenses, he became so embarrassed that he fell down to the ground. And then, desiring to see the beauty of Krishna's face, he rose up again. And then he remembered his mistake, and again he fell down. And he rose and fell, rising, rolling on the ground, trying to touch each one of Krishna's, every one of his heads to Krishna's feet. The great all-knowing Brahma became completely overwhelmed with transcendental confusion. Remembering the magnitude of what he had just seen, his ecstatic tears became a bathing ceremony for Krishna's small lotus feet. Then, very, very slowly, wiping his eyes, his head bent low, concentrating his mind, his body trembling, with faltering words, Chaturmukh, Lord Brahma, began to offer his praise. Krishna responded by exhibiting an extremely grave mood. As the puppet master of this entire pastime, Krishna moved everyone and everything according to his own desire. He enacted this drama to show the whole universe a wonderful display of his transcendental energy. Yet Krishna was simply a small boy. And so Lord Brahma, he kneeled down to present his prayers on the same level as this tiny child. Thus, with sweetness mixed with respect, he began his prayers. First, he directed his meditation towards this young boy standing before him. O son of Rajraj Nanda, he said, all glories to you. Your enchanting Gunja necklace, it shines brighter than the moon. A splendid forest flower garland swings on your transcendental body. Equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute tucked into your waist belt, you stand before me with food in your hand. I glorify your wonderful transcendental body that is the source of all consciousness. realizing the severity of his offense, Brahma feared that Krishna may use crooked words to conceal his superiority and instead embarrass Brahma by glorifying him. He might say, "Please hear me, O Brahma. You are the master of all the power in the universe, and I am just the son of a forest cowherd's man. You are an ancient figure, and I am just a little boy. I am not qualified to accept your praise." Fearing such clever words, Lord Brahma admits, "I cannot understand the glories of your body, which appears to be engaged in childish play. I cannot understand the extent of the happiness you experience by herding calves. If one with a controlled mind cannot understand you, then what to speak of those with uncontrolled minds?" From his own experience, he expressed that it was simply impossible to understand this two-handed cowherd boy by any other process than to hear from those who have pure devotion. He condemned his own foolish activity of trying to test Krishna and compared himself to an unborn baby kicking within the womb who would naturally be tolerated and forgiven by their mother. He begged and begged to be forgiven. He glorified the inconceivable opulences of Krishna in his many forms and described the reason for the Lord's appearance in various species. He praised the eternal nature of the pastimes of the Lord and described the temporary nature of the material world. Lord Brahma's prayers are full of the best Vedic conclusions which are necessary to refute the arrogance of those who do not believe that there is a supreme. Nevertheless, there is something very, very mysterious happening here. Very mysterious. While Brahma is expressing these Vedic understandings of Krishna's opulence, the residents of Braj, including Krishna, have no interest in this. They're simply interested in loving Krishna as an almost ordinary child, except he's completely extraordinary, and they love him in an extraordinary way. They don't want to know who he is. They don't want to hear about his greatness. For them, he is theirs, and they cannot think of anything else. Perhaps the last thing that they would appreciate would be these prayers. Gradually, Lord Brahma begins to feel uncomfortable for all his words of glorification are merely words. He has come a great distance in his understanding. And as he proceeds with his prayers, he begins to awaken a desire that he himself could be born in this extraordinary place. He began his prayers in Vaidhi, knowledge, logic, and reverence. Yet as he progressed, he found himself speaking about rag, or uncontrollable, spontaneous attraction. O Krishna, attractor of the heart, as long as they do not become your people, as long as they do not attain your service, the devotees will have a natural desire for eating and sleeping and enjoyment while remembering you. And thus their houses will become like prisons where they sleep and forget you. Then they will become overwhelmed with moha or bewilderment out of extreme suffering. After profuse glorification of the Braj residents, including Nanda Baba and the others, Lord Brahma gained the courage to say what was actually on his mind. My greatest good fortune would be to take any birth, whatever it is, in this forest of Gokul, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Brahmaji feels himself unworthy of a human birth, but he feels he would be so honored and fortunate to become anything, even a piece of stone, to catch a little of the dust that an ordinary sweeper here in Braj would sweep his way. He does not aspire to directly achieve the dust of Krishna's feet. He aspires for the mercy of Krishna's devotees. Then, completing his prayers, he concludes, "For my lifespan, which is a kalpa, I offer my respects to you and all your decorations, like the Gunja necklace and the earrings and the peacock feather and the rice in your left hand. Oh, I offer my respects to you. Oh, Krishna, the son of Nanda, full of the highest bliss. By Krishna's mercy, he had witnessed the most extraordinary display of opulence, never seen before, and beyond anyone's power to comprehend. But now, he had fallen into the ocean of Krishna's sweetness. While this extraordinary exchange is taking place between Brahma and this little transcendental boy, Krishna does not say anything. He does not even look at Lord Brahma, and he does not respond to his prayers. By his silent response, he's indicating that Brahma must now return to his own abode and complete his service of universal creation. And only then could he come to Vrindavan and obtain the mercy of the inhabitants there. I think we are being given some guidance in these wise words. May these prayers of Lord Brahma, which are capable of destroying all the influence of the material world, which are the ocean of all conclusions about devotion, may these prayers remain impressed upon your hearts. Tomorrow night, we will hear more about why Krishna did not respond to Brahmaji's prayers. And we will also conclude this beautiful Leela. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.